Marc Fumaroli, professor emeritus at the Collège de France and former Edmund J. Safra visiting professor at the National Gallery of Art, examines four landscape paintings by Jean-Honoré Fragonard from the period 1775-1780. A game of hot cockles, blind man's buff, the swing, and a game of horse and rider. In contrast to the pleasure-seeking pursuits usually identified in these garden scenes, Fumaroli sees fearful apprehension in Fragonard's ambiguous depiction of natural settings and human expressions. Several paintings by Jean-Honoré Fragonard hang in a gallery with muted sage-green walls, wainscoting below, and stepped and carved mouldings, creating a cornice near the ceiling. Other paintings in the room are individual and family portraits, landscapes and seascapes, and mythological scenes. Several white marble sculptures on plinths and pedestals, about 4 feet tall, are spaced between the paintings. Professor Fumaroli walks into the gallery and pauses in front of a grouping of Fragonard's works, which the camera pans across. The swing and blind man's buff are about the same size, measuring about 7 feet high by about 6 feet across. A game of horse and rider is roughly half the size, at about 4 feet high by almost 3 feet across. All three paintings show deep, soaring landscapes occupied by relatively small figures playing games in the low-lying, flat, grassy areas in the foreground at the bottom of each canvas. The horizon line in each work is about a quarter of the way up from the base of the composition, so that the upper three quarters is filled with trees, robin's egg blue skies, and in the swing and blind man's buff, towering clouds painted with bright white tops and pale lavender shadows beneath. The colour palette of all three paintings is consistent, dominated by celery and olive greens and tawny, soft browns that give way to hazy blue tones in the background of each scene. These colours of the landscape are punctuated by the colours of the clothing of the men and women of leisure and the children who populate the scenes. Warm crimson, rose pink, butter, or goldenrod yellow, teal, baby blue, and forest green. The human figures are recurrent types rather than individuals, all with creamy peach skin and similarly dressed. The women's long dresses have ruffled sleeves that come up to their elbows, and many wear hats or have their hair pulled up. The men wear jackets over creamy white shirts, and some wear white stockings with knee-length breeches. Lush vegetation dominates all three scenes, towering over the small human figures, who are painted in a sketch-like way, with unblended strokes of paint and marks to indicate facial features and other aspects of their appearance. The first painting Professor Fumaroli focuses on is The Swing, which shows a woman wearing a rose pink and sunshine yellow dress, swinging forward on a seat suspended by long ropes secured high in the trees along the left edge of the composition. She swings between two fountains, stone plinths supporting reclining lions that spout water out of their mouths into large urns overflowing into an oval pool below. The swing is also guided from the ground by two ropes held by a man who stands near the lion closer to the viewer and a young woman seated next to the other lion fountain. In another tableau in the lower left foreground, a woman in a voluminous crimson dress dangles a small white dog over the pool at the foot of the lion fountain closer to the viewer. A male companion dressed in a forest green jacket and loose-fitting knee breeches sprawls on the ground, propped on his elbows. A pair and a group of four figures, all dressed in pale cream and light aqua-coloured clothing, lounge on the grass at centre foreground. One woman gestures up towards the swing, extending her arm in a wave to the swinger, who appears to return the wave, her outreaching hand clutching some flowers or leaves. To the right, a woman seated on a low stone platform peers through a long telescope she has raised to her eye. She's accompanied by a young man leaning against the platform. This area of the foreground is enclosed by a low stone balustrade that curves from near the lower right corner into the distance. The land dips off beyond the foreground, filled with verdant vegetation and, in the distance, a natural prominence of ivory-coloured stone. A game of horse and rider shows a grouping of people playing games on the grassy edge of a river. A man and woman are seated near the lower left corner in front of a copse of thin, straight trees with white bark. Slightly to their right, a barefoot and bare-legged man with arms upraised runs towards a group of figures on the right side of the canvas, while another man watches, reclining on the turf just behind. The focal point of the canvas is a group of five male figures who are intertwined near the lower right corner of the painting. In their game, two men stand, bent forward from the waist at a right angle, to form a horse, one figure holding the hips of the one in front of him. Two men pile onto them as riders in piggyback fashion. The forward horseman butts his head into a large tree in their path that reaches upward from the right edge of the painting. He grasps the tree with his arms to support the weight of the riders. A river winds into the distance beyond this spit of land. A long rowboat, like a gondola, pulls up on the opposite bank, and more figures disembark. Blind Man's Buff shows a large group of people dispersed around a formerly landscaped garden. The garden is situated at the bottom of a slope and a tall retaining wall, topped by a balustraded terrace. The lower garden is defined by screen-like rectangular trellises that enclose box hedges, beyond which stand tall cypress trees and a hillside beyond. Rectangular beds of abundant lavender flowers further define the space. In the lower left foreground, a young woman wearing a blindfold stands facing the viewer with her arms outstretched. Young men and women clustered around her lean away or stoop to avoid her touch. To the right, a table is set in a trellised room-like enclosure beneath the retaining wall. Men, women, and children sit and stand at the table, which is spread with carafes and what could be fruit or rolls. Above the garden, beyond the upper stone balustrade, is positioned a sculpture of a helmeted woman who appears to represent the goddess Minerva. Behind her, a geyser of water from a fountain rises above the trees. The water appears to cascade from there between two tall cypress trees and into a basin near the blindfolded woman. A second fountain in the lower left corner of the canvas features a single jet of water rising from an elevated rounded basin supported by four columnar sculptural figures. It's encircled by a bed of pink and white flowers. In the background, behind the blindfolded figure, who is highlighted by the sun, another group of people, indistinctly painted and shrouded in green shadow, appear to rest on a bench or other seating in front of another trellis that defines the space. All three paintings have carved and gilded wooden frames with mouldings and coves and ornaments at the corners and the center of each side. Professor Fumaroli also mentions drawings by Fragonard and, briefly, a painting by François Boucher called The Love Letter, which hangs in the same gallery.
when I stay here, I was very often in the galleries, and the only art object that obliged me to come back several times was this series of four paintings. And I was fascinated by the double entendre of these paintings that I couldn't have imagined from the photographs. But before them, I discovered that this painter, Fragonard, present comme a sort of résumé of the douceur de vivre of the old regime, the preference of charm to real beauty, and so and so. In fact, there was this extraordinary beauty in the parks. There was this atmosphere of leisure and of playfulness among the little Lilliputian figures. But in the general, I have the feeling that behind this joie de vivre, there was a profound anguish. And it was translated by the skies, who seemed to promise a storm, and the disproportion of the size of the figures, and the enormous development of nature. It was a garden, but with one century of abandon, I should say. And this disproportion has something disturbing. You have never seen a cypress so big. They are frightening. And in all drawings of Fragonard, you see that he doesn't represent nature, he reimagines nature. And this nature is a nature that has been, times ago, a park, and now has become almost a forest. There is a remark in the journal of his friend of Mécène, Monsieur de Grandcourt. He said, "This painter has deceived me. He is full of fear." He's full of fear. And at that time, it was at the end of the 70s, the French Revolution is far away. And it's very interesting to see that for him, like in the memoirs of Madame Lebrun, there is a sort of presentment of big drama, and it was no more possible to do painting without a certain intimation of anguish. And this is a new phase of the Rocaille. Because the Rocaille was not an art of anguish, of terror. So it is the confrontation of an art of happiness, an art of harmony, with a terrible drama that is unable to describe directly, but with sous-entendu in the apparent happiness of the representation. There is the storm, there is the trees that are sometimes the appearance of a skeleton hand, that's frightening in a way, and the gestures that are given by the painter to these little figures, so little, is incredible, because in traditional fête galante, the size of the figures are a little greater. They are in harmony with the trees. But here they are in total disharmony with the trees, and their gestures are disquieting. You have the young man who is going at toute allure in the painting. It can be flying from something terrible he has seen, and he wants to prevent his friends. Or the girl with swinging, or the girls with doing this gesture, you have the impression that they are like flies that a wind can transport and destroy. And so every sign of the painting has a double entendre, the traditional fête galante and something new, some inner menace that is of the range of tragedy. The playfulness is a mask that is maintained because they have not realized how much they have threatened. It's my interpretation. For me, I can't anymore see this painting without this double meaning, but it's totally absent in the painting of Boucher and Watteau, in spite that they invented the rocaille style. Fragonard has painted very often old age. Old age. He was fascinated by old age. He was fascinated, in my view, as Bergeret de Grandcourt has perfectly felt. He was afraid. It was a man who was a feeling that the art that he loves was on the point of disappear, but everything he has learned from Boucher was detested by his contemporaries, and that he was a survivor of a great period, or a joyous period, but on the point of disappearing. So there is an element of ominous in these paintings, in my view. He was not alone, but many texts of the contemporaries are full of this anguish of something unknown was in store.